Thank you for tuning to the podcast once again today. This is Brother Tim McVeigh, and we're here in Blaine, Pennsylvania. We're in the middle of the Blaine services, and we've asked some folks that have come into town to just share their testimonies with us. Now, we thank the Lord for that. And we have Miss Chelsea LaRoche with us. Her husband, Nate LaRoche, is here with us also. And Chelsea's going to give her testimony, what the Lord has done for her. And so we're thankful that they're here. And I pray that you would take heed and listen to the things that she says as she talks about how God has worked in her life. As we've challenged so many times in this podcast, what God has done for others, he certainly can do for you, and how we give God the glory. And so, Chelsea, you just go ahead and tell us what God has done for you, what God has laid on your heart. Thank you so much for being here.
So, my name is Chelsea, and I want to thank Brother McVeigh for giving me the opportunity to be on the podcast, and I want to thank God because he's the only reason I have anything to say. I want to start, when I was a child, I was raised in a Christian kind of home, not really. We did go in and out of fundamental Baptist churches, and we didn't really have faithfulness in my home. We were in and out all the time. But when I was in between the age of 4 and 6, I really don't remember exactly. I did pray a prayer, and I asked Jesus to come into my heart and save me. And from that moment on, I was counted as a saved person. I was baptized, and it didn't really mean anything to me. I don't even remember the actual experience itself. It wasn't something I had the proper understanding of what I was doing or anything of that sort, but that's just how I was raised. That's how you got saved, by praying that prayer. And I do remember on and off as a child, as a teenager, and as a young adult woman sitting in services, and once in a while there would be something coming in that was conviction on me. I did not realize that it was conviction. At the time, really, that wasn't what I would have called it, but there would be a stirring in my heart, and I'd start to get nervous and think, what if I'm not actually saved? What if I might be going to hell still, or something along those lines? And I would just sit in my pew while the preaching was going on, and I would say, Dear Jesus, just in case I'm not actually saved, if that didn't work, will you please come into my heart again and save me? And I had to pray that just in case backup prayer many different times. I never told anybody. That was just, you know, I think just what most people probably do when you're suffering in that condition. Once I was in my teen years, I was very rebellious. I would sneak out of my parents' home. I had boyfriends a lot. I was drinking, partying, smoking marijuana regularly at 13, 14 years old. And this is as a quotation mark saved person. So no new creature, of course. And I met my now husband whenever I was 16, and I just wanted out of my parents' house. I was ready to get out of there. There was a lot of hypocrisy. There was a lot of drinking and fighting and yelling and just bad things in my home, and I really wanted out of there. I thought I could do a lot better job, and I proved that wrong really fast, but I won't get ahead of myself. So I moved in with my boyfriend and his parents when I was 16. Barely a year later, I dropped out of school in my 11th grade year, and my husband and I got married on my 5 days after I turned 17. And I thank God for that, because we were two lost people getting married and just living vile and living in sin and everything. But he was very gracious in the husband that he gave me. My husband was not raised under preaching. He was not raised with the Word of God. He knew nothing about it, and yet several years later, after living in squalor and sin, my husband decided he was going to take his family to church regularly, and he brought me to the house of God where I could hear preaching and where I was eventually converted. So, yeah, I'm kind of jumping a little around here, but we'll just go back to the last 6 or 8 years, I guess, probably from around the time my son was 2 and he's now 10. My husband and I started drinking alcohol, and we smoked marijuana daily all the time. But then once the alcohol started, that was when it got really bad, because I drank every day, all the time. I was hooked on it, and I just lived a miserable, sin-filled life. I was so depressed all the time. There was a hole in my heart, in my life. At the end of those many years, so many times we would say, we have got to stop doing this. We can't do this anymore. We're wrecking our lives. We're ruining our son's life. And this is just going to be the rest of our life, just drinking and being drunk every single night. And how can that really be what we do for the rest of our lives, right? And so we would say, okay, this is it. We've got to stop. We've got to quit. Sometimes it would only last a night. By the next day, we were drinking again. Sometime it would last a few days. And I think the longest we were ever able to actually make it on our own was 2 weeks. And we maybe did that two different times. There was a time when maybe six or seven years ago, when we had stopped drinking for a lengthy period of time. But during that time, we were abusing prescription drugs that were not prescribed to us. So, you know, you can kind of be righteous about that, like, oh, I wasn't drinking, but we were abusing pills the whole time. And during this time, the reason we weren't drinking was because we had committed to going to church again, a Baptist church in the area that we had lived in. And we actually became members of that church. And they were good people. They were good to us. And God was good to us during that time. But I should speak for myself. I basically was spitting in the face of God that entire time. There was no change. It was really good for a little while because it did help the hurt a little bit. You know, we stopped drinking and we were in the house of God regularly. We were around God's people. We were in prayer meetings and Bible studies and under preaching regularly. So yeah, our life, it hurt less during that time, but there was still nothing real to it for me. There was no substance. There was nothing I could go to bed with at night that helped me, that I had peace. I went to bed with just peace in my soul, and I had no relationship with God, no personal relationship. I wasn't reading my Bible outside of church. That didn't even occur to me. I wasn't regularly in prayer to Him. I might have prayed for things from the Wednesday night prayer list and things of that sort, but I had no personal relationship with Him, and henceforth I had no real peace. So it fell apart rather quickly. I want to say we made it about a year in being in church and everything there, but when there was nothing real to it for me at the end of the day, we began to drink again a little bit at first. We lived in the same town as the pastor of that church, and that's where we also went to the liquor store. So it was kind of a game of risk we were playing for a long time. We'd always think, one of these days, either our pastor or a member of that church, they're going to see us coming in out of that liquor store. We're going to get caught. And we did this for months, and it's just shameful what we did, you know, to God, to those people that loved us and were really so good to us there. And I am ashamed of those things. But eventually it got to the point where we just knew we were going to get caught. We couldn't get away with it forever. So what did we do? We ran away and we just picked up and we moved back to where we had moved from to get there for our fresh start. It was bad. Those next few years after that were just hell. Just spending all of our time just drunk, on drugs, whatever we could do. And that's when we really started getting into going to the bars and partying and driving drunk all the time. I mean, when you're talking about living a disgusting, sin-filled life, just being this person in the dirt, that is exactly who I was. And that's exactly the life that I was living. And those memories are painful. That was a hard life. Living in sin is a hard life. You might think you're doing okay for a little while, and you might think you're having fun, but nobody who's ever lived that life, I know what I'm talking about. You cannot tell me that it's a good life, that you're having a good time. You might have good times in that time, in that kind of a life, but it will not last. It's hard. And so those next 3-4 years after we moved back, it's like that verse in the Bible that talks about how the spirit left that person, the unclean spirit, and then they came back and found the house swept and garnished, but 7 more evil spirits came back, and it kind of felt like that. We had given these things up, and we had tried to do good, and we did these things, but then when we went back to it, it was 7 times worse. And all the while, my son is living with us. He's only 5 years old. He started kindergarten that year, living in a home with selfish, wicked parents who chose so many things over him, who chose their own sin over him. And not to mention I chose all of that over God, of course. During that time, though, oh, God has been so good. He's had much, much mercy on me and in my life. because I think about that wretched time, that terrible, miserable time. And in that, he was working in the LaRoche family. I didn't see it. I had no clue of the things that he would have in store for us. I could have never, ever imagined what a good God he is and what he could do for us. I never could have imagined it or dreamed it up in my wildest dreams. Excuse me. But in that time, he was working because there was a church, the Black Creek Baptist Church in Black Creek, New York, which was about an hour and a half away from where we lived at the time. And my parents started going to that church, and my little sister and my little brother, they started going to that church here and there. I think it was just my dad at first, and then my dad and my sister started going, and then the whole family would go. And then they would start taking our son Taryn with them. Not every time, but very frequently he would go to the services with them. And he would be asking for prayer for his mommy and daddy to stop drinking and to come to church. And I had no idea. I was not aware of that for a very long time. I found out later he had been asking for that prayer for about 3 years. He faithfully asked for prayer for his parents, and he prayed to God, and God did hear that little boy's prayer, but it wasn't right away. It didn't happen right away. Our son had asked us to come to church. Mom and Dad, will you please come to church? My parents, my siblings, they would ask us. Took 3 years of them asking, will you guys please come to church? Just come, just see what it's like. I was so done with church at that point. It had never helped me. It had never fixed my wretched self. It had never taken those addictions away from me. It had never given me joy or peace. It was just more of the same, and I felt, what was the point? Why can't we just stay doing the things we wanted to do that we thought we were happy doing? And I just didn't want to give it the time of day. And so we would keep telling Taryn, yeah, we'll go. We'll go someday. We'll go someday. And at the time, we had a real jalopy. We had a lemon of a car. And, you know, it was an hour and a half drive. And so I kept telling my parents, I told our son, we will go to church at Black Creek once we get a new car. When I get a new car, we'll go. We'll make the trip. Well, I got a new car. And I think it was in between 9 and 12 months after I got the new car, you know, because I was a liar. And I did not honor my word. And so, you know, they're still asking. And so almost a year after getting the new car, we finally went out to church one day. And, of course, I had no shame. So I was hungover and probably still half drunk the next day when I went into the service there at church. And we were a half an hour late. And Brother McVeigh was kind enough to call attention to that when we walked into the service. And so we walked in, and I was uncomfortable. I was definitely out of my comfort zone. We sat down, and I do believe that Brother Cliff Taylor was the first one preaching that day when we came in. And we sat down, and I was like, you know, I'm just here to appease my son, to appease my family. You know, more or less, we've been saying it for so long, we just got to be here. We just got to do it, like shut everybody up kind of thing. Real good motive for going to church, right? I sat there in the pew, and the man of God was preaching, and my mouth just started to open a little bit more, and my jaw's probably just hanging open. I'm wondering, just marveling within myself, I've never heard the Word of God preached this way. This guy actually looks like he means what he's talking about. He actually looks like he believes he's telling the truth, and he's talking from what he knows inside of him, and he's talking about that Bible and preaching about that Bible in a way that he believes that it's actually the Word of God, that it's actually true just the way that it's written and for just what it says. And that was just astonishing to me. That, because again, I didn't want to go to church because there was nothing ever real for me there. And I didn't really see anything real for most of the people I have ever seen going in and out of churches in my experience. So when I saw that, it was amazing to me. And that gripped onto me. And I believe there was probably more than one preacher that day, so we got to hear more than one message, and it was convicting. And immediately, I had already started wondering. Let me back up just a little bit. My dad and my mom had just started, within the last couple of months before that, started to hint things at me about the possibility of not truly being saved themselves. I had grown up, and as I said in the beginning of this podcast, my family struggled with their faithfulness to church. we were in and out, and my parents themselves, there were many nights I went to bed listening to them fighting, screaming, breaking things, drinking. And yet we would be, there were times when we'd be in the house of God and my dad would be wearing a suit and carrying a Bible. And he claimed salvation all those years of my life. He claimed to have gotten saved whenever I was just a baby. So I grew up believing that my dad was saved, even though we lived the life that we did. I guess I didn't really know any better. So within the last couple of months before we came to church, he started saying things like, you know, I'm just starting to realize I don't think that I'm actually truly saved. And I'm like, immediately, I just wanted to put my fingers in my ear right at that moment and stop listening, because it just sounded like nonsense to me. My whole life I've been taught, once saved, always saved. You can't lose your salvation. So, you know, he asked Jesus into his heart 27 years ago, or however long, and how could he be telling me now that he's not saved? That goes against everything I've ever been taught. And so I accused my parents of being in a cult. I said it was just foolishness. I didn't want anything to do with it. I was just mad and annoyed with the whole idea of it. And yet I sat in that service the first time I went to church, and within just a couple messages, I'm like, I don't think that I have that. I do not think that I'm saved. Like, this can't be right. This can't be what it is. Maybe there's something more to it. And, you know, I would be sitting all those years, you know, drunk and sinning openly, not hiding it, just doing awful things. There are things that I would never want my family to know. And yet I would have said, I prayed that prayer so I'm saved and you can't tell me otherwise. That is not what God says in his word a saved person lives like. God says that a saved person becomes a new creature and old things are passed away. All things become new. That is not the evidence of a Christian, according to my Bible, the life that I was living. So after we had been there that day, we didn't want to go back. We wanted to stay. We wanted to hear more preaching. We wanted to be a part of that meeting that was going on. And Brother McVeigh and my dad had talked to me one afternoon. We were having lunch in between services, and they said, listen, LaRoches, you don't need to go home. Here's $100. You go get a room at the motel down the road, and you stay, and you know, we'll take care of that. You don't worry about it. And that was pretty marvelous to me as well. I've never really seen people do anything, you know, that was just generous. And for them to care enough for us to stay, to be preaching, that they would pay for us to have a room to stay. It was just wonderful to me. It meant something. And that same week during those services, there was a man of God who I did not personally know. And he has since gone home to be with the Lord. But I've heard many good testimonies from other people of this man, that he was a man of God. And his name was Brother Paul Foltz. And one day after a service, and I don't remember what was preached about, but he stood up in that service and he said, listen, there's a spirit of rebellion in this church this afternoon. And God is saying that he's going to blow out that candle forever if you don't take this serious, if you don't stop messing around and start going after him and seeking him, making that change that you know needs to be made, he's going to blow out your candle forever and it's done. And I remember being more terrified than I've ever been scared in my entire life when he said that, because I knew he was talking to me directly. I was burning hot from the inside out. I thought I was going to vomit. I was so scared. And I purposed and determined in my heart from that moment, I will not play games. Whatever God wanted me to do, I would seek him, and I wanted him. I wanted to know him personally. I wanted what I could see some other people had. When I met Pastor John Asquith at the Black Creek Baptist Church, I really saw Jesus for, I think, the first time in him, because I thought, oh my goodness, like, he has to have it. It has to be real. You just have to know him to be able to see his generosity and his care for people without Christ, and what he'll do for somebody in the hopes of winning them to Christ is just truly marvelous. And oh boy, I think I just lost my train of thought. Okay, it doesn't matter then. We're just going to go back to whenever I was scared. I purposed in my heart, I know what I was going to say, I wanted to have something real too. I'd seen something real in other people, and I didn't want my candle blown out. I didn't want to go to hell, and I didn't want to stay stuck in my misery and just live this awful shell of a life that I've lived all these years, and nothing ever made it feel any better. No matter how hard I tried to numb it or make it feel good or whatever, it just always hurt. It was always horrible. And I said, I want to come. I want to be a part of the preaching as much as possible. I want to just immerse myself in the house of God, and I want to change. I want an actual changed life. I wanted to find Him. And within just, I think just a few short weeks of us going back and forth, that hour and a half one way to the services, my husband and I were already dreaming of being able to move out there and just be a part of that church, be close to the things of God, and live a different life. And now that's not really that miraculous, because we've run away a lot. We've moved a lot, and each time we were really just running away. We wanted a fresh start. We wanted to start over, but we always started over the same way. And so it never was a fresh start, and nothing ever changed. But this was different. We wanted to move because we wanted to be under the preaching. We wanted to move because we wanted to be where God was. And that might sound silly to some people, but my husband, he found a job very quickly in Olean, just 20 minutes maybe from where we live now. And his boss actually had the home that we now rent. So God just provided all of that within about a month, maybe a month and a half of the first time we attended a service. We moved out to Cuba. It takes us maybe 6 or 8 minutes, if that, to drive to church every service. And God is just so good to allow us to have been able to make that move, to make that transition. Everything just worked out perfectly. I wonder why. God was drawing us. Of course, He was drawing me. And I would sit under the preaching after that point, and God just did a miraculous work in my heart. I truly longed for Him. I truly longed for the things of God. He was very attractive to me. Jesus was. Because I just knew that that's where my healing was. I knew that my healing laid in Jesus Christ, and that only He could fix me. Only He could make me whole and give me this new life. I always wished I could be happy. And I love my husband and I love my son. And for years I lived with them, loving them, but always wondering why I couldn't be truly happy with them. Because, like I said, when I went to bed at night, I didn't truly have real happiness or peace or joy. I just felt so broken, like there was something so wrong with me that we couldn't be truly happy. And God has done a wonderful thing for my family. Just wonderful. We no longer live in a home where my son goes to bed at night, probably with his fingers in his ears, because his parents were out up late every night drinking and carrying on and being foolish and listening to filthy music and just carrying on. And that's how we went to bed. And I remember thinking that I was just so self-righteous, thinking I'll never be like my parents. I'll never put my children through what they put me through. And I used to think that we were so much better than them because my husband is not loud like my dad was. He didn't break things. We didn't scream and fight. But we put my son through the same hell. We were no better. Oh, gosh, I'm jumping around so much that I'm going all out of order. But a lot has happened. God has done so much. It's hard to keep it on one straight track. Excuse me. But I sat under the preaching. There's an October meeting at our church in Black Creek as well. And 2 years ago in October, Brother McVeigh came and he preached that meeting. And I was under conviction the whole meeting. I remember sitting there and there'd be tears coming down my face as he would preach different things. Especially when he would speak of just women destroyed in sin and just the wretchedness of their lives. And he would speak of their conversion or the healing that's taken place. I would so long for that. I would sit there thinking and praying that it could be me, that it could happen for me. And the last night of that meeting, of October meeting, I was sitting there, and I believe Brother McVeigh had said, you know, people sit there and you linger and you take care of things. If God's speaking to you, don't get up and just go home and leave. And so I sat there and I was upset and I was troubled. I was convicted. And I remember exactly what God showed me that night as I was sitting there and I was in my pew and I was just praying to him. And I had no idea what to even ask him or to say. And I had no idea what he was going to do or what he could do. And I remember clearly that night he said in my heart to me, he said, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." And I thought, ooh, well, I've done that. I've done that my whole life. I've always put other things before God. I've always had other gods before him. And so I immediately took that and I knew I was guilty. That's all I got that night. I shouldn't say all, not like it's a small thing, but I wasn't saved that night. But I took that home with me and we went home and I remember we had this chalkboard, magnetic chalkboard that was on our refrigerator. And I remember taking out green chalk and I wrote on the chalkboard that night, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." I didn't want to take it lightly and I didn't want to forget that night. And I wrote that there and I remember I'd just go through the kitchen, I'd go in and out of the fridge and I'd look at that and I'd read that and I'd wonder, what does that mean? Like, where will this go, you know? But again, I was not saved that night. And there was a couple more services in between then and there because I believe Brother McVeigh went over to Wellsville that Sunday night. And so there was a service there. And again, I was convicted, I was tore up, but I did not get saved that night. The next week, so it had been almost a week, it was a Thursday night, 6 days after God had showed me, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me," we went to a missions conference in Shingle House, Pennsylvania, where Pastor Phil Seeley has a church there. And there was a man, Joshua Rhodes, he was preaching there. And Thursday night, I was so torn up over my sin, over my condition, over the fact that I still did not have relief. I did not have peace or joy. I was still bothered, and still things were better in my life. We hadn't been drinking for about 4 months by that point. I mean, things were definitely better. God had already had so much goodness and mercy and grace poured out on our lives, but I was not saved. I still didn't know him, so I wasn't fixed yet. And Thursday night, I was tore up. I was so bothered, but I left that night again without Jesus Christ. We went back again Friday night. And I was convicted probably as soon as I sat down and just wanting him, wanting that relationship, wanting to be saved. And the Brother Rhodes preached that night. He preached about the woman who washed Jesus' feet with her hair. And he also preached on the woman at the well. Again, I just thought I wanted to put myself in the shoes of those women because those were women that God had saved and made whole and healed, and I just wanted to be that woman. I wanted him to heal me and make me whole. And that night, my heart just cried out for him that night. And Brother Rhodes declared in the preaching that night, being a church girl in and out my whole life, how many times do you think I have heard that my Father, God in heaven, can forgive anyone? That's pretty much the main message that's preached, right? You're a sinner, and only God can forgive you. But that night, he said it more than once. He said, "My Father can forgive anyone." And he wasn't just saying it lightly. He was declaring it. And it was so heavy to me because I needed much forgiveness. It was so heavy. He said, "My Father can forgive anyone." And I thought, well, if he can forgive anyone, then he has to be able to forgive me because I'm anyone. And after the service was over, I didn't go up to the altar. I sat glued to my pew. It was like lead was in my shoes. I couldn't get up. I was so heavy. I was so weighed down with my sin. But more than anything that night, I remember so clearly I had a loneliness for Jesus Christ that was so heavy and so unbearable. I thought, I need him. He's the only thing that can make me feel better and that can make me whole. He's the only one. I want to be able to go to bed. I want to be able to know him, and I want him to know me. And so I looked at my husband just sobbing, and I said, "I cannot leave. We cannot go home. I cannot get up out of this pew." And Pastor Hain, he looked at me and he saw me upset, and he came over and he talked to me and he told me something that night that he had already told me before, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks before. And he said, "Chelsea, don't compare yourself to anyone else. Stop comparing yourself to other people and thinking that the same thing that happened to them is going to be what happened to you." And that night it clicked. He said it before, but I didn't apply it. I didn't take hold of his words of wisdom. But that is what I was doing. There are people in our church that I had believed their testimonies. I believed that they were truly born again. And they had these great, to me, what sounded like these great explosive salvation experiences where these fireworks just went off and these amazing things happened. And I thought, this isn't happening for me. Where are the fireworks? And it's got to happen the way it happened for them, or it's not real. It just can't be real. But Pastor Hain told me that again that night. He said, don't compare yourself to other people. You're a different person. God wants to save you. He's already saved them. And I believed him that night, and I took it to heart, and I said, you know, I should probably listen to that. And so I stopped worrying about that, and I told God right there. I said, God, I am choosing to give up my way of thinking this night. My way of thinking doesn't benefit me. I can't think up salvation myself. I can't think up these fireworks or these things that happen to these other people. And I told him, I'm just going to choose to believe right now that what you say in the Word of God is true, that the promises you've given to us are true. In other words, the promise that that man of God said tonight, that my Father can forgive anyone. I'm going to believe that it's true and that you can forgive me and that you can save me. And that's what I told him. And I looked at my husband and I said, I think we can go. I didn't even tell him right then. I didn't say I got saved. I just said, I think we can go home now. I'm ready to go. And it's about a 40, 45 minute drive home, and it was dark. And I just remember looking out the window in awe, just wondering, is this it? Like, am I saved? Because that wasn't what I was thinking was going to happen. That wasn't what I was expecting, because no fireworks went off. But I was able to get up and go home. I didn't have that hole in my heart anymore. I didn't feel lonely for Jesus anymore. I didn't feel broken and busted anymore. I just felt like I can go home. And so we went home that night, and I still kind of wanted to just feel it all out, examine it, and just be sure, you know, because I didn't want to say anything to my husband, as he was a lost man as well. And I didn't want to, I always worry that if I'm not really saved and I'm just making a false profession, I could damage somebody else and hinder them. But I couldn't contain it. I was like, we need to go in the room. We need to talk. And I just asked him, will you get down and pray with me? I'm pretty sure I just got saved. And we got down on our knees together and we just prayed. And whenever I started praying, I didn't even know what I was thinking about or what I was about to pray about. And I don't know if I've really thought about this in quite a while. It's just coming to me. Tears are just pouring out of my eyes onto the bed. And I just remembered in that moment, I realized how thankful I was for the last several years of my life. And I just started thanking God for those years. And I started thanking God for my family, for my husband and my son, and all that he had brought us through and all that he had allowed us to go through. The fact that he drew us out of that life, out of that darkness. He drew me out of that to himself. And I just remember, I didn't even know where it came from, but I just remember thanking him for all of it and just wondering at what had just happened. And I probably should shut up here soon, but I have said a couple of times since then in testifying in church service and different things like that, that, you know, how you kind of hear that cliche thing that the world says sometimes, like, oh, that person, they found Jesus now. Like, oh, Chelsea found Jesus. She's not going to do that anymore. And I've said, I didn't find Jesus. Jesus found me because I wasn't even looking for him. I had a Bible shoved in a box somewhere in my house somewhere. I was living for myself and for my sin. I wasn't looking for Jesus. He found me. He reached down into the dirt and he picked me out of it and he pulled me into this new life and he gave me fellowship with him. And so many things I can't even begin to explain how grateful I am. There's that verse. Oh, I love this verse in the Bible. It talks about to who is forgiven much, the same loveth much. And the part in the scripture that talks about who will be more thankful or who will love more. And Jesus says it's going to be the person who has been forgiven more. And oh my goodness, God has forgiven me for so, so much. I was so undeserving that he would even be a fraction of the amount of good that he was to me. But he poured out goodness on me, poured out mercy and love, and I was so unworthy of it. I am so unworthy of it, and I just marvel at what God has done, and I do pray that this will be a help to somebody, because if you are somebody who maybe is in church right now and you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking that any of this sounds familiar, that you prayed a prayer and you asked Jesus to come into your heart and then you've sat in services and you've prayed that just in case backup prayer and you still go to bed at night, maybe you don't live that awful, sinful, outward sinful life that I did, but maybe you go to bed at night and you don't have that peace and you don't have that joy and you wonder and you don't have that relationship with Jesus Christ. Maybe this will be a help to you, and I hope that it will. I pray that God will use this to help somebody, and I'm just thankful for the opportunity to share what Jesus has done for me.